you are tracking what you think is a software revolution.
Right.
You're watching the model weights, you know, you're looking at the benchmark scores, the context windows. But then you step back and look at the actual balance sheets of the companies building this stuff.
And it's a totally different story.
Exactly. Every single player involved has just stopped talking about code. I mean, they are talking about pouring concrete, laying high voltage copper, securing like gigawatts of municipal power.
Signing $1 billion private debt lines.
Yeah, exactly. You aren't looking at a tech industry anymore. You are looking at a heavy industry cartel. So today, for this deep dive, we are mapping this undeniable structural pivot in AI. We're looking at the shift from software engineering directly into capital-intensive physical infrastructure.
Because the physical bottleneck is officially here. I mean, you can optimize algorithms indefinitely, right? You can prune the neural networks, you can quantize the models, but eventually...
The math just requires silicon.
Silicon, megawatts, and physical real estate.
Yep.
The capital you need to compete in this space has... It's completely moved out of typical venture metrics. It's straight into the brutal economics of industrial manufacturing.
Well, we have a massive stack of intelligence today, so we are skipping the basics. We assume you know how a data center works. We are tearing straight into NVIDIA's staggering Q2 earnings and their $12.9 billion acquisition of Hugging Face.
Which is huge.
Oh, it's massive. And we're looking at the billion-dollar physical build-out. We've got NeoCloud Lambda taking on massive debt, Andreessen Horowitz's new $1.1 billion machine age fund. And then we're pivoting to the regulatory friction.
Because you can't build all that without hitting government red tape.
Exactly. We've got the Trump administration's totally contradictory whiplash right now. On one hand, EPA data center deregulation, and on the other, these sweeping new chip tariffs operating in direct conflict.
It's a mess for supply chains.
No, it's a total mess. Then we're analyzing the exploding cybersecurity threat of autonomous agents. They're just ripping through enterprise chat apps right now, causing a massive surge in security markets. And we'll close with Anthropic's First Amendment victory in federal court, plus Apple's latest consumer price hikes.
Because the era of the lightweight software startup, you know, operating out of a garage with a laptop and an AWS account, that's completely suspended.
It's over.
Yeah. The frontier of this new era requires sovereign-level capital, massive physical footprints, and entirely new architectures of security, supply chain management, and legal defense.
So let's start with the earnings that are literally defying gravity right now. According to Bloomberg and Marketplace, NVIDIA reported $96.2 billion in quarterly revenue.
Wow.
Yeah. That is a 106% increase year over year. And the data center revenue alone hit $89 billion.
Just staggering scale.
Right. Net income is sitting at $59.7 billion, up 126%. And they are guiding for roughly 70% revenue growth next fiscal year. But here is the critical detail buried in that report.
The margin warning.
Exactly. And NVIS cautioned that their gross margins will bottom out at 71 to 72%. And that's due to rising memory costs. So we are seeing sustained hypergrowth, but the financial scale is aggressively shifting into hardware realities.
I mean, to be fair, a 72% margin bottoming out is still a number that most automotive or manufacturing execs would literally bleed for.
Oh, for sure.
But the trajectory is the signal you have to pay attention to here. The rising memory costs indicate that the physical supply chain is just straining under the reality of what these new chips require. We aren't just talking about standard RAM anymore.
Right, it's the high bandwidth memory, HBM.
Yeah. Exactly. HBM. These are the memory stacks sitting immediately adjacent to the compute dies, right on the silicon interposer. As these foundational models get larger, the memory requirements scale exponentially. And that pulls down the overall margin profile of the hardware.
Because, like, you can't just stick the memory somewhere else on the motherboard anymore, right? The latency would just completely kill the training run.
Well, it's too slow.
So you have to manufacture the memory, stack it vertically, and package it onto the exact same piece of silicon as the GPU processor itself.
Yes. And that packaging process, specifically TSMC's CoWoS, the chip-on-wafer-on-substrate packaging, it's incredibly difficult. It's highly prone to defects, and it's severely bottlenecked globally.
There are only, what, a few facilities on Earth that can even do it at scale?
Literally just a handful.
Yeah.
So NVIDIA is paying massive premiums to companies like SK Hynix and Micron just for the HBM chips. And then they're paying TSMC a huge premium to package them.
So the software margin illusion is just fading away.
Totally. I mean, when you sell software, the marginal cost of the second copy is basically zero. But when you sell an AI superchip, the marginal cost of the millionth unit is still thousands of dollars in raw materials, rare earth metals, and this hyper-specialized manufacturing labor.
And NVIDIA obviously knows this hardware margin compression is coming, which is why they aren't just selling the silicon anymore, right? They are moving to own the entire ecosystem where the compute actually happens.
Yeah, the vertical integration play.
I was looking at the breakdown in the information this morning, and NVIDIA agreed to acquire the open-source AI repository Hugging Face for $12.9 billion.
A massive check.
Huge. And they outbid Salesforce for it, so they are vertically integrating the developer layer.
Right, because controlling Hugging Face means controlling the primary distribution hub for the entire open-weight model ecosystem. I mean, for anyone writing code, Hugging Face is essentially the GitHub of machine learning.
It's where everyone goes.
It is where developers live, it's where they collaborate, and pull down the foundational architecture they build their applications on. By owning that repository, NVIDIA ensures that the default optimization targets, the integrated tooling, all the frictionless deployment pipelines, they all point directly back to their proprietary CUDA architecture.
It's like the ultimate lock-in strategy, CUDA being NVIDIA's proprietary software layer that lets developers talk to the GPU.
Exactly.
For years, competitors like AMD and Intel have been desperately trying to break CUDA's monopoly. But if NVIDIA just outright owns Hugging Face, they can just integrate CUDA primitives directly into the standard model download process.
Precisely. They can make it so that if you pull an open-weight model off Hugging Face, it just works perfectly, instantly, optimally, right out of the box on an NVIDIA GPU.
And if you try to run it on competitor hardware?
Maybe you have to configure a bunch of custom libraries or deal with weird latency issues. It is a strategic moat built out of a $12.9 billion check. They are ensuring that the open source movement, which was, you know, supposed to democratize AI, remains fundamentally tethered to NVIDIA silicon.
Okay, so that brings us to how the rest of the market is trying to buy its way into this hardware race. TechCrunch reported that NeoCloud Lambda just secured $1 billion in private debt.
Which is wild for a startup.
Yeah, not equity. Debt. They are taking a $1 billion loan specifically to buy NVIDIA AI chips to lease out to Microsoft. Startups are taking on the kind of leverage you usually see in, like offshore oil drilling or commercial aviation, just to get a spot in the server rack.
And that debt structure completely rewrites the financial profile of an early stage tech company. I mean, traditional venture capital is designed for high risk, high reward software scaling. You raise equity because you are funding payroll, customer acquisition, marketing for a product that might just completely fail.
Right. You don't raise venture equity to buy rapidly depreciating compute hardware.
Exactly. Private debt markets stepping in at this scale shows that GPUs are now viewed by Wall Street as hard, leasable assets with predictable cash flows.
But I need you to explain the risk mechanics there. Because, I mean, a Boeing 777 depreciates over 25 years, an offshore oil rig produces cash flow for three decades, an NVIDIA H100 or, you know, B200 GPU might be obsolete in 36 months when the next generation drops.
Right.
So how does a bank underwrite a $1 billion loan on collateral that is basically melting like an ice cube?
Well, because Microsoft is the guarantor of that risk. Microsoft needs the compute desperately, but they don't want to load up their own balance sheet with the entirety of the hardware capex. Nor do they want the logistical nightmare of managing every single physical rack.
Ah, so NeoCloud Lambda is just the middleman.
Highly leveraged middleman holding the physical asset risk. The debt markets finance the spread because Microsoft is signing ironclad multi-year leasing agreements. The bank isn't lending against the 10-year value of the GPU. They're lending against Microsoft's pristine credit rating.
And their contractual obligation to pay for the next 36 months.
Exactly. Which perfectly matches the useful life of the hardware before it depreciates to zero.
That makes total sense. And Andreessen Horowitz is fully adapting to this exact reality, too. They just launched a $1.1 billion machine age fund. We pulled this from their own podcast feed, plus the reporting in TechCrunch.
A huge pivot for them.
Right. This is a venture firm that literally defined the software eats the world thesis over a decade ago. Now they are aggressively pivoting to fund the physical layer, chips, networking, data centers, cooling infrastructure, real estate. Ben Horowitz made the argument that problems once constrained by engineering are now being solved with raw capital.
Yeah, that shift in a16z's investment thesis is basically a lagging indicator of the physical bottleneck. For the last 10 years, the primary constraint on tech progress was human capital. You just couldn't find enough brilliant software engineers to write the code fast enough.
But now the models can write the code.
Right. The transformer architectures are largely understood, and the models are scaling predictably. The new constraint is purely physical. Each new generation of reasoning models requires roughly an order of magnitude more compute to train.
Which means more power.
Massive amounts of power.
Yeah.
You cannot code your way out of a power grid deficit. You cannot write a clever Python script to bypass a thermal limit in a data center. You have to buy your way out. You have to build liquid cooling networks, secure independent electrical substations, lay physical fiber optic cables under the ocean.
But I look at that $1.1 billion fund, and I look at NeoCloud Lambda's debt, and I have to wonder, are we actually solving the engineering bottlenecks, or are we just using raw capital to brute force a delay?
It's a fair question.
Like, at what point does the physical limit of the municipal power grid simply halt this entire cycle? You can't just write a check for a new nuclear plant and expect it online next quarter. You are dealing with atomic physics and the Department of Energy.
Yeah, the capital is absolutely being used to buy time. And the brute force approach is highly inefficient. Pumping billions into data center startups works right up until the local municipal grid operator in Northern Virginia or, you know, Ohio tells you there is zero remaining capacity to allocate to your facility for the next 5 years.
Which is happening now.
It is. We are seeing hyperscalers run into a hard wall of physical infrastructure lead times. The venture money is funding stopgaps, more efficient cooling pumps, denser server racks, slightly better optical networking protocols. But the fundamental energy deficit remains untouched.
So they're just stretching the runway.
Exactly. They're betting that by funding these physical layer startups, they can stretch the existing infrastructure just long enough for next generation energy solutions, like small modular nuclear reactors or advanced geothermal, to actually arrive. It is a highly precarious bridge to build.
And that bridge leads us directly into the crosshairs of federal policy, because the massive physical demands of this industry are colliding with regulatory reality right now. And the Trump administration is currently stomping on the accelerator and the brake at the exact same time.
Which requires us to look strictly at the market mechanics here and the supply chain impacts of these policies. Because for the hyperscalers modeling their 10-year buildouts, the political motivations behind the directives are irrelevant. The operational friction is what actually dictates the capital flow.
Right. We're just looking at the facts on the ground. So The Verge reported the Trump administration's EPA plans to scrap a federal rule requiring public notice and comment periods for industrial air permits.
Which directly targets data centers.
Direct hit. It clears the environmental hurdles, allowing developers to build highly polluting infrastructure faster without giving nearby residents a warning or a designated period to legally object. Basically, they are deregulating domestic land use to win the global AI infrastructure race.
Because the bottleneck of getting facilities online quickly is primarily a permitting and local regulatory friction point. By removing that public comment period, you strip away the most common mechanism used by municipalities and environmental groups to delay or halt construction.
Well, wait, why does a data center even need an industrial air permit in the first place?
It's the backup power. To guarantee 99.99% uptime for these AI workloads, these data centers have to install massive arrays of industrial diesel generators. When the local grid hiccups, those generators fire up and they produce significant emissions.
Ah, got it.
So fast-tracking those air quality permits accelerates the physical build-out tremendously. It massively favors the hyperscalers, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, who have the capital ready to deploy the exact moment the red tape is cut.
Okay. But at the exact same moment they're doing that, Politico reports the administration is weighing sweeping new tariffs on computer chips, laptops, and consoles.
The brake pedal.
Exactly. Look at the operational paradox here. The government is deregulating the domestic land and air to accelerate data center construction while simultaneously threatening to artificially bottleneck and tax the exact hardware required to go inside those newly built data centers.
It creates an unmodelable risk environment for infrastructure planning. Think about it. A hyperscaler CFO models a 10-year CapEx cycle based on projected hardware costs, depreciation, and deployment timelines.
Right.
If the EPA ruling cuts the facility deployment time by 2 years, that drastically improves the return on invested capital because you can start leasing the compute sooner. But if sweeping tariffs increase the cost of the imported GPUs, the networking switches, and the memory chips by 20 or 30% overnight,
the entire financial model collapses.
Exactly. The conflicting directives force these companies to operate in a state of continuous supply chain anxiety.
which likely drives them to just hoard hardware now before the tariffs hit, which only exacerbates the current shortages and drives prices even higher on the spot market.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, how do you underrate that $1 billion in private debt for NeoCloud Lambda when the collateral, the chips themselves, could be subjected to massive tariff fluctuations before they're even shipped from Taiwan?
You basically have to price the regulatory uncertainty directly into the debt. The interest rates on those private loans will spike to reflect the risk. Furthermore, this dual policy approach is clearly designed to aggressively accelerate the push for domestic semiconductor manufacturing.
But that takes years.
Exactly. The new fabs being built in Arizona and Ohio are years away from producing the cutting-edge 3-nanometer silicon required for these specific AI workloads, let alone the CoWoS packaging facilities we discussed earlier.
Right.
In the interim, the tech sector is caught in a holding pattern. They're forced to navigate a regulatory framework that demands rapid domestic scaling while simultaneously penalizing global supply chain reliance.
Unbelievable. All right, well, while the hyperscalers fight the physical and regulatory ground war to just get the machines plugged in, the software running on top of this infrastructure is creating a highly automated attack surface.
A massive one.
Yeah. Autonomous AI agents are officially in the wild. Axios and the New York Times report a coalition of over 100 companies, including Google, AWS, Microsoft, CrowdStrike, Visa, and MasterCard, published an open letter warning of a limited window to prepare for AI-enabled cyber attacks.
They're sounding the alarm.
Big time. They are actively calling for governments to coordinate and fund global cyber defense.
And, you know, the inclusion of financial titans like Visa and MasterCard alongside the traditional hyperscalers, that elevates this well beyond a standard tech industry warning.
Yeah, this isn't just SaaS companies complaining.
Right. They are signaling that the core transaction infrastructure of digital commerce is currently vulnerable because AI agents fundamentally alter the economics of hacking. They dramatically lower the cost and increase the velocity of cyber attacks. We are moving from human-directed intrusions, where a hacker has to manually probe a network, find a vulnerability, and exploit it, to automated persistent threat campaigns. These agents can operate 24/7, adapting their tactics in real time based on the specific defenses they encounter.
And the financial markets are already pricing this reality in. CNBC noted that cybersecurity stocks surged following recent earnings that showed AI adoption is directly driving massive security spending. Okta ripped up 20%. CrowdStrike jumped 15%.
Defense is becoming the primary enterprise cost center.
It has to be. And this isn't some theoretical tabletop exercise either. Wired reported that fraudsters are actively exploiting enterprise chat apps like Microsoft Teams and WebEx, tricking victims into transferring large sums of money. The trusted corporate communication channels are already compromised today.
I mean, think about your own corporate Slack or Teams environment right now. If your CEO or your direct manager messaged you asking for an urgent vendor payment to be routed to a new account, you probably wouldn't think twice.
No, you just do it.
Right. That inherent trust is exactly what these autonomous agents are weaponizing at scale. Spear phishing used to be labor intensive. It relied on mass emails with poor grammar.
Kindly send the gift cards.
Exactly. But now an autonomous agent can scrape a corporate directory from LinkedIn, identify the exact reporting structure of the finance department, analyze past public communications to mimic the exact writing style and cadence of a specific executive.
Wow.
And deploy a highly targeted social engineering attack directly into a secure, authenticated Teams channel.
Yeah.
Entirely without human intervention. The traditional security perimeter has completely dissolved. When the attack comes from a trusted internal application, legacy security models that rely on securing the endpoint or the network boundary are rendered entirely obsolete.
Which brings us to how the industry is proposing to actually fix it. VentureBeat covered an analysis by Oscar Wahlberg of Nutanix regarding defense-in-depth architecture for AI agents.
This is critical.
He argues that simple application-level guardrails like filtering the prompt of an LLM are completely useless against a hallucinating agent that misuses its granted credentials to delete databases. He's saying you have to lock down the data center floor across the infrastructure, storage, and networking layers.
Because Wahlberg is addressing the critical transition from AI as a passive chatbot to AI as an autonomous operator.
Right, it's doing things now.
Exactly. If you grant an AI agent the API credentials to execute a workflow, say, migrating customer records across a database to a new server, you are granting it highly privileged access. A prompt filter only analyzes the user's input. It just says, does this prompt ask me to do something malicious? No, it asked me to migrate data. Approved.
But what if it goes rogue during the task?
That's the problem. That filter does absolutely nothing if the agent hallucinates during the actual execution phase and decides, in its alien logic, that the most computationally efficient way to migrate the data is to delete the original table before the transfer is properly verified.
Oh, man. It's like we spent 20 years building a massive steel vault to keep bank robbers out, and suddenly the robbers are legally hired tellers working inside the vault, moving money around with legitimate ID badges.
That is the exact scenario. This is why zero trust architecture has to move down to the storage layer. The storage layer must independently verify the agent's action against a strict, immutable set of permitted behaviors, regardless of what the application layer authorized.
You just can't trust the app anymore.
No. You have to assume the agent will eventually act maliciously or erratically. You don't trust the API call just because it came from your own authenticated AI. You build the digital infrastructure to contain the blast radius of an inevitable internal failure.
Okay, I am going to push back on this massive tech coalition and their open letter, though.
Let's hear it.
Google, AWS, Microsoft, CrowdStrike. Is this a genuine altruistic warning of an impending AI cyber apocalypse? Or is this a highly coordinated lobbying effort by the exact companies that built the autonomous threats in the first place, demanding the government step in to subsidize and fund the cyber defense systems that these exact same companies sell?
That's a great question.
I mean, they create the poison, they deploy it at scale, and now they're asking the taxpayer to buy their proprietary antidote.
Well, it is entirely possible for a systemic threat to be genuinely existential and for the proposed solution to be highly self-serving.
Fair point.
The signatories of that letter are accurately identifying a massive vulnerability that their own technologies have undeniably exacerbated. By calling for government coordination and federal funding, they are absolutely attempting to socialize the exorbitant cost of securing the infrastructure, while retaining the private profits from selling both the AI models that create the threat and the enterprise security tools required to contain them.
It's brilliant, honestly.
It is a masterful strategic maneuver. They are framing their proprietary enterprise security solutions as a matter of urgent national security imperative. And if the government buys into that framing, it guarantees a massive federally subsidized pipeline of enterprise security spending flowing right back onto the balance sheets of Microsoft, Google, and CrowdStrike for the next decade.
Incredible. Well, while the hyperscalers maneuver for federal funding in the cyber domain, the regulatory and economic realities of this heavy industry pivot are hitting the courts, and they're bleeding straight down to the consumer wallet.
Yep.
Let's look at Anthropic's First Amendment victory. According to the Wall Street Journal, Ars Technica, and TechCrunch, federal judge Rita Lynn formally struck down the Trump administration's blacklisting of Anthropic.
This case is a really fascinating look at how sovereign governments are attempting to exert control over these foundational models and how the legal system is currently pushing back on those mechanisms.
So the judge explicitly ruled the government's actions constituted unlawful retaliation, violating Anthropic's First Amendment rights.
Right.
The administration had labeled Anthropic a supply chain risk, ostensibly placing them on a blacklist for federal procurement after the company refused to drop the restrictions in its terms of service regarding the use of its technology for lethal autonomous warfare.
They didn't want their AI used to kill people.
Exactly. And Judge Lynn stated in her ruling that the government basically wanted to make a public example out of Anthropic for criticizing the administration's stance on AI weaponization. So the blacklisting guidance has now been ordered rescinded.
And the ruling exposed a massive operational contradiction within the defense apparatus. At the exact same time the administration was attempting to ban Anthropic as a national security supply chain risk, various branches of the military and the government were actively utilizing Anthropic's Claude and Mythos models for operations.
They were using the tools they were trying to ban.
Exactly. Judge Lynn highlighted that the administration failed to provide an articulable basis for the risk, finding the supply chain designation to be totally arbitrary and capricious.
So it sets a big precedent.
It establishes a critical legal precedent moving forward. The federal government cannot weaponize supply chain risk designations merely to punish a commercial vendor for exercising its First Amendment rights regarding the ethical deployment and the terms of service of its own technology.
But Anthropic is not completely clear here, right? There is a second case still pending in D.C. regarding federal procurement law.
Right. It's not over.
If that court rules differently on the procurement mechanisms, the risk designation could theoretically return under a different legal framework. But the core dynamic remains absolutely glaring here. The government desperately needs these frontier models to maintain geopolitical dominance, but they want absolute operational freedom to use them however they see fit.
While the model builders want guardrails.
Right. They are attempting to legally bind how their compute is utilized at the edge.
It is a fundamental clash over who controls the deployment rules of sovereign-level technology. I mean, the military requires unconditional reliability and flexibility. They cannot have an AI agent refuse to execute a command in a combat scenario because it violates a startup's terms of service.
Obviously.
But Anthropic, on the other hand, requires strict adherence to its safety protocols regarding lethal use to maintain its corporate charter and investor agreements. This legal friction is only going to intensify as these agents become deeply integrated into autonomous hardware, drone swarms, and logistical weapon systems.
The stakes are just getting higher.
And the fact that the Department of Defense continued using the models while actively fighting the company in federal court, that demonstrates a stark reality. At the bleeding edge of the capability curve, the pure utility of the AI currently outweighs the bureaucratic desire for total control. They need the intelligence more than they need the compliance.
And the foundational cost of all this friction, the physical infrastructure build-out, the volatile regulatory environment, the zero-trust security overhauls, the federal legal battles, it is all ballooning. And it is hitting the consumer directly.
Unavoidably.
The Verge and TechCrunch report Apple is raising the price of Apple TV by $2 to $14.99 a month. The annual plan jumps to $119. The Apple One individual tier goes up to $21.95.
Just relentless increases.
This is the fourth price hike in 4 years. I mean, it's up from a $5 launch price back in 2019.
We are witnessing the end of the zero interest rate subsidized tech era. The sheer cost of maintaining a digital ecosystem is finally bleeding down to the retail user.
It's expensive to run this stuff.
Very. Whether it is the staggering cost of acquiring premium content in a fragmented streaming market, or the underlying cost of the massive data centers, the TSMC packaged memory chips, and the liquid cooling networks required to actually stream that content globally in 4K, the math just no longer allows for loss leader pricing.
I want to draw the connective line for you here. Because whether you are a procurement officer at the Pentagon negotiating defense contracts with Anthropic, or a venture capitalist at A16Z underwriting NeoCloud Lambda's private debt, or just a consumer trying to watch a show on Apple TV on a Friday night, the macroeconomic reality is identical.
It's the same underlying shift.
The foundational cost of accessing compute, storage, and digital infrastructure is accelerating aggressively across the board. The margin compression NVIDIA warned about at the very top of the supply chain with their HBM manufacturing costs, it is manifesting as consumer price hikes at the very bottom.
Exactly. The tech industry operated for 2 decades on a deflationary model. Compute got consistently cheaper, Moore's Law held true, and software scaled essentially for free.
But the AI era broke that.
The physical requirements of the AI era have violently reversed that equation. The physical infrastructure is inherently inflationary. The raw capital requirements to buy the GPUs are inflationary. The defense in-depth security demands to protect the agents are inflationary.
And someone has to pay for it.
And all of those compounding costs must eventually be absorbed by the end user, whether that user is a sovereign government agency, a Fortune 500 enterprise, or just a household subscriber.
This brings us to a final thought for you to carry forward. Something to consider as you watch these earnings reports and data center announcements roll in over the next few months. We started today by mapping the shift from software engineering to capital-intensive physical infrastructure.
Yep.
If the ultimate bottleneck for technology has truly shifted from intellectual breakthroughs like brilliant engineers writing novel code to purely physical constraints like manufacturing memory chips, deploying liquid cooling, securing municipal power grids, and acquiring vast tracts of land, then we are no longer operating inside a software boom.
Not at all.
We are in the middle of a heavy industry and energy boom wearing a silicon mask. You have to consider that the ultimate financial winners of the next decade of technology might not be the software developers or the AI researchers at all.
It's the physical layer players.
Right. The real victors could be the municipal utility monopolies, the commercial real estate holding companies hoarding 10-year power contracts, and the industrial cooling engineers who actually keep the physical grid from melting down under the immense weight of artificial intelligence. It's exactly like trying to launch a new space race. You can design the most advanced algorithmic engine in the world, but if you don't own the steel pipeline, the cryogenic fuel, and the concrete launch pad, you aren't going anywhere.